Today's Data for Good podcast was a very interesting one, given that we spoke to a huge advocate for DBT, and that is Ava Schreier. She is analytics manager at Neugelb Studios in Berlin, and she talked about how DBT helps to bridge a connection between analysts and engineers, and how it helps both of those parties to, not on like a Venn diagram, learn about each other's areas, and also the great benefits for leaders and the great benefits for the business. Enjoy the podcast from a very enthusiastic Ava Schreier. What are the misconceptions with DBT?
I think the misconception that I've seen, at least, is that it's a tech tool, or primarily a tech tool.
Okay, good. Explain some more what you mean.
I think, so DBT, I have to say, I'm a big fan of DBT, so don't get me wrong, I really like the tool, but it changes a lot within existing data teams when you implement it. And especially for analysts, for the people that are used to create complex queries and that are able to build ad hoc analysis for their stakeholders, at least at the beginning, for them, DBT seems like a burden. They don't see the benefits of it because all of a sudden they can't write just complex queries on top of raw data anymore. They have to build the table in DBT first, and then it has to go through tests, and then it has to go run overnight. And then just in the next morning, if they are lucky and if everything ran, they can then build their analysis. So I think there is this misconception that DBT is an engineering tool. And I think it impacts the lives and the work of analysts to a great extent. And this is something that, in my experience, is sometimes forgotten.
Is there then a steep learning curve? So you talk about there's a lot of hard work up front, and then after that, it really does help to simplify the work of analysts.
Yeah, definitely. So one of my colleagues, Marielle Dadeau, she introduced that idea of instructional scaffolding. So kind of when you introduce the learning step by step and don't kind of expose all the complexity or the seen complexity of DBT with having to do it in a text editor, having to use Git, kind of having to use version control, all of that, what might be completely new to analysts, if you don't expose all of that to analysts at once and scare them off, but do it step by step and help them to get familiar with each step, then I think it's a great tool for analysts. It enables them to do a lot of really cool work. But at the beginning, the benefits, I think, are mainly there for the engineers. And sometimes they might struggle that those benefits of test of data, increased data quality, testing, modular SQL, that I think some of them struggle to see that this is not something that analysts really care about. They care about speed. They care about that they can answer their business, their stakeholders immediately. They care about maybe also their complex SQL queries because they nurtured them for such a long time, and all of a sudden they have to do it differently.
That's sometimes the disconnect on the people side with analysts and engineers and even other technical domains of data. Let's go back a bit. We're talking about DBT today.
Yes.
What makes this topic so interesting for you personally or professionally?
I think because I was one of the analysts that got really scared off of the tool at the beginning when I first saw it. So I was in a small team with a data engineer, and then I was a senior and an experienced analyst, and I kind of thought I know my domain and I was good at it. And then we implemented DBT, and all of a sudden I realized I'm a bloody beginner. I didn't know how to use Git. I didn't know. I'm not coming from a technical background. I'm coming from a business background. So I had the feeling I just lost all of my analytics powers, because the queries that I wrote, the queries that I was proud of, they were kind of all of a sudden, I was told, yeah, but now please build models. And then the models should be done in a way that easy querying on top of them would be sufficient. It was also following a process where you really have to think about how a table is supposed to look like was something very new to me. And I think it is for a lot of analysts, if they are not coming from a technical background. So at the beginning, I hated it. I really hated the tool, and I didn't see the benefits at all for me. And then after a while, with help of that great data engineer back then, I saw that the power that I got from it, because I think something that, or this is the reason why I think it's at the end such a amazing tool for analysts, is that analysts are the people that know how a table is supposed to look like. They might not have thought about it so far, but they know exactly what they need to answer their stakeholder questions. This is something that typically data engineers don't know that well. So they are maybe able to build a table, but the analysts at least have to tell them how that table should look like. And all of a sudden, I was able to build that table myself. And it was actually, I mean, if you get used to DBT, it's really not that hard. So it was really cool to have that power of creating tables that I truly needed for my stakeholders. So so this is why I think, and I experienced that now twice. So in the company where I am right now, we also just implemented DBT a couple of months ago. And I'm in constant conversation with the data engineer to make him aware that it's not only implementing DBT, but we have to think about how the analysts perceive it. And we have to think about how to help them to make that change from just writing complex code to actually building tables. So I think this is something that is probably happening quite often, that you have to make that effort that it's actually a change project and not so much a tech project.
Yeah, it would be great if engineers could have a closer connection with the stakeholders, if only for this exercise, to understand what the priorities are from an analyst perspective. But, you know, time is of the essence in delivery, so not always possible.
Yeah, exactly.
As we're talking about DBT today, it's always great to break things down into people, process, or tech, or all of them. What would you like to focus on today?
I think, so not so much tech, I think process and people, I think, is the areas that I'm most interested in. I also think that's the areas that are impacted most when you implement DBT, because I think from a tech perspective, and now probably a lot of data engineers will hate me for this, but if you build your queries in Airflow or if you build it in DBT, it's kind of at the end you get tables. That's kind of what you get. And the tech behind is something that the management doesn't care about. Probably your business stakeholders don't care about where you build the tables. That is something that's very technical and it has to work, but it's something that at the end is kind of mainly relevant for the people that actually have to work with it. And that's the analysts. So the analysts are the stakeholders in that way. So this is why I think it's so important to keep them in the loop, to make them aware what they gain from having DBT at their exposure.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, if we're looking at people and process, because they are interrelated, primarily with DBT, what is the problem that you and others in the analytics world face? What problem does DBT solve for you?
I think for me, it solves the problem that it's actually amazing to have. So I think DBT, when you implement DBT, then all, at the same time, if you want it or not, you implement software engineering principles into an analytics team. So principles like code reviews, so that you have actually that you have PRs that get reviewed by someone else, or that you can easily implement data quality tests within DBT, be it unit tests or column tests or whatever. And this is something that is amazing. And this gives especially a small data team, a small analytics team, for the first time, they get a feeling for how good their work actually is, because they can code review each other. I mean, they can do it theoretically without DBT as well, but a lot of teams don't do it because it's not part of the tooling. So also the data quality, I mean, I've worked as a standalone analyst before, and just realizing that I probably on a bad day created KPIs that really don't make sense, but no, but I had nobody to talk to about, because there was no code review of it, there was no pairing of it. This is something that DBT helps with. You can even, with creating your own unit tests, you can even code review kind of yourself. I mean, I know that's not ideal, but if you are a standalone analyst, this tool can actually help you to kind of code review your code yourself. So I think just that, yeah, that the reliability of your data is something that is easier to have an to kind of to have a feeling for with DBT.
Recognizing that you are a leader, in what context were you experiencing DBT?
So,
because it sounds like you were investing in it, like you were at IC level, and it was all about discovery and experimentation, or maybe even testing different tools for implementation.
So at my first role a couple of months ago, when I first got introduced to DBT, I was a senior data analyst back then, and then I became team lead. So I had hands-on experience of using DBT and struggling and fighting with it, and then starting to love it and starting to use it. And as we were back then in my old company, as we were quite a small data team, even as a people lead, I was still very operational. So we had a huge project of we wanted to implement self-serve analytics at that company. And so I created about 15 tables just for self-serve analytics in DBT and was maintaining them all the time. Now in my new role at Neugelb, I don't use it on a daily basis anymore because I just don't have the time. I'm purely managing the team. But I see the impact it has on my analysts. So I have a data engineer, or 1.5 data engineers in my team, and then a couple of analysts. And I see the impact that it has, because they're working together much closer now that they actually have DBT, and they speak about tables and they speak about improvements of tables that previously had to be built by the data engineer in Airflow, and it was quite a complex process. So nobody ever touched those tables again. And now we see the improvements. We can make smaller tables. We can decrease the traffic that we have. That always means decreasing costs. So also as a manager or as a people lead, I see the impact that DBT has on my team, and I like it a lot.
Okay. So then, as a quick note for other leaders, and I know there are other leaders who are making that shift or introducing DBT, what benefits are they going to see pretty early on? You know, you alluded to costs in bottom line and in time there. What benefits will they see early on?
So I'm not sure if they immediately see cost benefits, because just recreating everything in DBT will take a while, and it also slows down the team for a while, and to be honest, might also lead to some duplications in tables. So I'm not so sure if the cost is something that you immediately see, but you will see it eventually. I think the thing that at least I saw immediately is that data engineering and analytics speak much more with each other. They speak about data, they speak about tables. So especially if you don't have, and I know that's quite still a pretty new term, but that there is this role of analytics engineer that kind of, I know it was created by DBT Labs, and so kind of to focus on DBT or similar tools. But if you, a lot of the people or a lot of the teams like my team, we don't have an analytics engineer. We have a data engineer that takes also care of all the data backend and does stuff that my analysts really don't care about. And then we have the analysts that work in a, mainly in a visualization tool like Tableau or Metabase or whatever. And sometimes there have been days where they didn't speak to each other at all. But now with DBT, they speak to each other all the time and they solve problems together, how to make tables faster, how to make tables smaller so that in our BI tools, they load faster. So I think this is really something that I enjoy a lot right now in just seeing within my team that there is such a strong working together between the data engineering and the analyst side of my team.
Could that then be a message to analysts and engineers then, that perhaps see DBT as an opportunity for you to learn a new area of data generally, being analysts and their tasks, and then vice versa with the analysts to engineering tasks?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think when you look at very kind of conservative role descriptions of data engineers, then, so I think, for example, implementing DBT in terms of setting it up is very clearly data engineering task. And for analysts, using tables and making visualizations out of it is very clearly an analytic task. But that thing in the middle that DBT all of a sudden needs to think about new tables and also how, where to structure them in DBT and how to structure them and what tests you need, that is something that if you don't have a dedicated role for it, then the two of them, the engineer and the analyst, they have to work together to figure it out. So maybe one example is, this was actually, I still laugh about it, but it is so, I think it's very typical. So when you use event data coming from a mobile app, you always get the Unix timestamp or the event timestamp, and it's in UTC. So for the data engineer, that's perfect. From a data engineering or from an engineering perspective, having a timestamp in UTC makes a lot of sense. And having that in every table in UTC makes a lot of sense. My companies in Germany, my stakeholders really don't need reports that are done in UTC time. So we had that argument when to convert that time to the local time zone. When to convert that field. And for him, it was, oh, the analysts can do that when they built the reports, when they built the dashboards. And I was, no, but what if an analyst just misses it? Then we have a dashboard that shows stuff in UTC time that doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's do it as early as possible in DBT, kind of as early as possible, so that there is no risk that we ever miss it. And he was, yeah, but that doesn't make any sense from an engineering perspective. And I was, yeah, but from a business perspective, it makes sense. And this was, I think it was a really healthy conversation to have to understand what the other side was coming from and why it was also difficult for him to understand why I want to have that early in the process. And this is something that I think it's really good, because also for metrics or when to convert metrics, when to convert currencies or time zones, this is something that doesn't happen automatically. You have to think about it, when to do it and how to do it. And this, I think it's very healthy to think about that together.
Yeah, okay. Two questions come to mind as we talk about this. the disconnect in tasks or even social connection between analysts and engineers is sometimes bridged by analytics engineers. So yeah. if we have analytics engineers in the team, what impact is that going to have on your delivery through DBT? And then the other question I was going to ask was about mindset. And could we talk about the mindset and approach that data engineers particularly could take in us fully integrating DBT? Sorry, let's go to analytics engineering first question.
Yes, I was making some notes to not forget the second one.
okay, I won't.
So I think analytics engineer can bridge that gap. I am not sure if they are always needed, because if you have analysts that are actually interested in doing that, and if you have a data engineer that is also open to kind of to bridge that gap as well, then I think analytics engineers have the most benefit of having analytics engineers if you have a lot of different projects in DBT that you actively have to manage in DBT. So far, the DBT setups that I experienced were rather small setups where you had one project and then, of course, a lot of models and a lot of tests and everything. But I think analytics engineers come more into play if you have bigger teams. And so far, I mainly experienced DBT in small teams.
Interesting.
I do think, though, and this was in my previous company, the setup that we had. So when DBT was implemented and when the setup was great and we knew everything was running, our amazing data engineer left us and we actually hired for an analytics engineer because we didn't see the need for a while to have a proper data engineer because there was just not enough for them to do on a purely data engineering side. Everything was set up and running. So we actually hired an analytics engineer to be closer to the analysts.
Interesting.
But this was,
okay,
I think, a very special setup.
Okay, so typically in smaller project environments, you can do without the analytics engineer, provided that you've got DBT set up. And in larger project environments, analytics engineers could be very helpful, very powerful.
If you have data engineers that are also that are actually interested in analytics, I think that is something that I think that's so. If you have, I think you can go without an analytics engineer if you have analysts and data engineers that are willing to breach or to reach kind of each out or to reach out to each other and work with each other and
okay,
go outside of their.
So that brings us to the next question around mindset and the kind of approach that engineers should take towards their work with team members, but also on the tooling, particularly with DBT. But I'll also add that whilst as a recruiter, we are always trying to find data professionals who are able to cross that frontier of working with people and understanding business problems before technical solutions for their technical problems. But sometimes we struggle. With that, what do you think should be then the mindset that engineers particularly take towards working in a DBT environment?
It's a hard question. Because my background is not data engineering, so I am leading a data engineer and slash analytics team right now. So I hope I don't miss anything obvious right now, but I think
this is for them.
I think for the data, I think data engineers are more than software engineers or backend engineers. Kind of, yes, they have to work on infrastructure and architecture, but with tools like DBT, they kind of they go into an analytics direction that they might have never gone so far. And I think to make that work, they really have to be, let's phrase it this way. With a tool like DBT, they might come closer to the business than they have been before. Because all of a sudden, they're quite close to analysts, and analysts are the ones that get the stakeholder requests. So I think data engineers really have to have that interest in analytics and helping the business answer analytical questions. That doesn't mean they have to become analysts or have to build graphs or anything, but thinking about how that asset data has to be structured and what requirements we have of data is something that a data engineer has to be interested in. And I think they are. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't be data engineers. It's a very complex field. And so it's not enough to only provide infrastructure or architecture. It's also about looking at the data, the structure of data, making sure that they provide data in a way that analysts and the business get what they need.
Okay. How about from the analyst perspective? Is there much adoption mindset that they need to take, or you know, do they only have to look at the community, the DBT community, to know that, you know, the feature set's amazing, the support for it's amazing, and the ease with which it will help you simplify all your work is above all. I don't want to say that. I don't want to say it is above all, because I don't know personally, and I know that it is just an opinion. So,
yeah,
I step back from that a little bit.
I think it really depends where the analyst is coming from. So, you have, and because also the title analyst is so broad, you can have financial analysts that mainly work with Excel, and might not even use databases. And then you have product analysts, kind of the new hot shit on the market, I think, at least I made the experience, that are very used to work with DBT and with events data and with sharded tables and with all the complexity of mobile apps and stuff like this. So I think it depends a bit where the analysts are coming from, but I think overall, yes, they need to adapt because it's a new way of working. They can't be the hero that saves the dashboard by just creating a new SQL query, because they have to follow a process now. They have to go to DBT, they have to modify or create a model, and then overnight it runs, and then next day they can change or update a dashboard. So they might feel at the beginning that they can't respond that quickly anymore to business requests. But it actually, I think when you decipher that a bit, it just means that they can't be that reactive anymore whenever somebody comes to them. But with DBT, they can actually be active and proactive and can create models that are actually needed before somebody asks them. So I think, yes, you need to have a certain, how to say that, an interest, I think, also in, especially when you use DBT Core, but you have to have a certain interest in how a table is built, and you have to have that interest in what is actually, also from the business perspective, what is it, how does a table have to look like so that my stakeholders can answer their questions. But I think that's very typical for all analysts, that they are interested in this.
It should be.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
They're not living into the purpose of their job if they're not taking that on board. Okay. And finally, from the leadership perspective, why would a leader go with DBT and not Snowflake or Snowplow or any other competitor?
Yeah. I have to say, you have to decide if you want to keep that in. So I'm just starting that answer again. I have to say, I have never sourced for DBT or any of the competitors. It was never my decision to implement DBT. So I'm very happy that we have, but I don't have any overview of the competitors.
Okay, that's cool. Well, maybe I'd ask, why would a leader be happy to work with DBT? And I'm talking about a business leader, not just a data leader.
Yeah, I think for a business leader, having a tool like DBT actually enables more people within your data team to create content, to create tables for various stakeholders. So it kind of, I think my data engineer put it once as data democratization. So quite often you only have a data engineering capacity that is able to create something out of raw data. And with DBT, or probably also with competitor tools, you put that in the hands of analysts, and therefore it's just a bigger group within the business. This alone should be reason enough for a business leader to get interested, because if more people can create meaningful data content that can then be accessed by product, by marketing, by sales, by customer service, it's already beneficial, because it just means that data will be brought broader into the business.
Brilliant. I will pass that on.
Thank you.
Okay, Eva, thanks for sharing so much today. I really appreciate it. And
it's a pleasure.
Your enthusiasm and passion comes forward. I understand you've also given a presentation on this. Do you want to tell me the title of the presentation and where people can find this?
So it was, the presentation was, we did it, I did it with a colleague, and it was part of the MDS Fest last year. So depending on when the audience now is watching this, it was the MDS Fest 2023. And the title of the presentation was How to Influence People and Win Friends When Migrating to DBT. You can find it online on YouTube. All of the presentations of the MDS Fest are there. It's really worth checking it out. It's a lot of really good presentations and talks. And there is another MDS Fest in April this year, 2024.
Excellent. And for the record, thanks for sharing that. I think you've given the name for our podcast today, and just now, that is. And this podcast should be aired in April 2024. We're recording this also in 2024, so we're not going too far into the future. But okay, I'll leave it there for today.